Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff here.
This is Rich Swann.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it, bro.
Support Ollie. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is and whoever Luke Owen is. Quote the Raven. Nevermore.
WrestleTalk. Rumble. No advice.
Hello and welcome to the WrestleTalk podcast. I'm El Fakeador Laurie Blake and I'm joined by housemate Simon Longdon.
Hello.
Hi mate, you've been living in a Star Wars universe for the past week and a bit, I think.
No, because I was away last week.
Well, you were away last week, but then you've come back and you've got Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order back in your hands. And I've noticed that quite often during the day, you're just watching Star Wars related videos on YouTube.
I'm having a bit of a Star Wars thing again.
Star Wars, it's that time of year.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, Star Wars season.
Yeah. At some point over the next, imagine month or so, I'm going to watch all the movies again or start watching Clone Wars or, I'm just having a bit of a moment.
Mandalorian.
I need to catch up on The Mandalorian, so I was away in America. But Fallen Order is amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited by all things Star Wars right now.
What's the best thing about Jedi Fallen Order?
That's a tricky one.
It's the lightsaber.
The lightsaber is very cool. The lightsaber is very cool. The level design's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Because also, I'm not a big player of Souls games or Bloodborne or any of those type of things. Like, what was...
Sekiro.
Like, that system of meditation points and enemies coming back. Yeah, that kind of thing. But, like, this is just so fun. Because it's just a bit more action-y and a bit, I guess, easier in a good way. It's still hard. And I just find myself kind of wandering around, like, actually, because you've got to sort of, you do your main objective and then you've just got to go back to your ship.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when you do all your exploration. You slow, as you come back, you always end up going through different paths, explore a new bit. Oh, what's that over there? I'll walk over there. And blah, you know, you find another boss and you find, all that kind of stuff. I'm not normally like that in games. So when a game gets me like that and I actually start genuinely just trying to explore everything, that's
attempting to play the game to its fullest degree.
Actually attempting to explore the thing that the game designers designed.
Yeah. Enjoying the world that somebody's made for you. Hundreds of people have slaved on for months and months.
One criticism of it is that it's not, and actually this is, I actually don't know if this is a criticism or not. It's a comment. It's actually not that Star Wars-y. In the sense that, yes, you've got stormtroopers everywhere, but a lot of the design of the enemies outside of the Empire don't feel that Star Wars-y in terms of like the sort of monster design.
Smushy rats, smushy yak things.
Which is, and also like quite early on you go down these tombs, everything's quite Stargate-y and almost Egyptian, and it's kind of almost explicitly kind of mentions aliens. So this is kind of a bit... That bit's a bit more sort of general sci-fi, but I actually quite like that because the music is very Star Wars-y, and I don't know, it's a really interesting. You could make the sword a metal sword, and swap the stormtroopers for orcs or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and it would be just as good.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I'm not going to play it. Not a massive. I know you're not going to play it. Not a massive Star Wars fan. I'll watch you play it on Twitch.
Maybe. Yeah, but yeah, I actually did more than I thought last night. I think I played about 4 hours last night.
totally addicted.
I think I've 70%ed the second planet.
My lord.
And they're big levels.
Well, we best get out of here so you can get back to it. Let's get into the main portion of the show. We'll be discussing, is there a new NXT title challenger from this week's episode? Here's the show. This was a really, really good episode of the show. And set up, I think, came out of the gates, one, like, building on what happened over the weekend on War Games and Survivor Series, but also attempted to position certain people ready for the future.
Mm.
So the main one to talk about is Finn Balor, who had a very big part to play in this episode of the show. Fresh off his win over Matt Riddle, TakeOver War Games, and fresh off sort of like... He kind of felt like he was floating around in, like, waiting for the Johnny Gargano feud, but Johnny's injured now. So now, Finn Balor, we're finally kind of finding out what's going to be happening with him. And it seems like they're setting up an NXT championship shot with Adam Cole somewhere down the line.
Yeah, it looks like they're either... I think he's going to get the shot now, and they'll save the Champa match for Mania weekend.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be what they're aiming for, which makes sense to me. Yeah, overall, the show kind of did sort of, I think in some points, kind of stretched that a little bit too far with who to pick as challenger, and in other cases, kind of shot the shot a bit early,
mm-hmm.
which, when we talk about the build towards War Games, one thing you could say about that build was that it all felt like they had one week too many, and it kind of all went a bit sort of ready.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I think some of the stuff they did in this show, particularly the main event, kind of, I think, may have done that same thing again, where it sort of happened very, very quickly. We've not really had a moment to kind of reset. It's just bang, straight on, which is a good thing in some ways, but in other ways, I think, I'm not sure necessarily whether this was perhaps a little too soon to start this straight away.
I would argue that this is, positioning Finn Balor in a first ever match with Tommaso Ciampa, which is what happened on the show. As the main event with no build. However, it's a way of maintaining momentum.
Exactly,
coming off
they
won in the ratings last week against AEW. They're going to hopefully get the big sort of post-Survivor Series boost as well. We'll find out later whether or not that happened. And then putting in like a recognizable star, but who is an NXT star in that sort of main event role is a very good idea. So that kind of meant that most of the show on the men's roster side of things was built around this angle. The show opens with Josiah Williams of Wrestle and Flow, who accompanied Adam Cole to the ring at one of the takeovers.
Yeah.
He said, after war, we went to Survivor Series and beat the brakes off Raw and SmackDown, and now it's time to celebrate because we are NXT. And then he goes down to the ring, rapping a song about NXT and how great it is, while all the superstars run down and they're dancing around the ring and chanting NXT with the crowd. It was kind of a goofy segment, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I wasn't crazy about it, only because I just don't think, in this day and age, I don't know, it just doesn't seem to make much sense to me that any wrestler would have, like, in kayfabe, brand loyalty like mm-hmm. that. It's just very difficult for, it's just not a thing that really gets me going. I know it's not really a massive deal, but yeah, for me that concept just felt a bit goofy.
I feel like
it felt very Raw SmackDown.
Mm, like, I enjoyed it, but I feel like NXT, it was more probably for the people at Full Sail to be like, you know, we're NXT United, we're a little club of people. And
I just think it's so hard to be in any group of superstars round the ring and not look like a bit of a geek. Do you know what I mean? It's just hard, like, you know, it's just hard not to, like, it does, I think. I think it just makes everyone look a bit silly.
So housemate Simon is on the Adam Cole camp because he didn't want people to do this either. No. He came out and he was like, stop, because the only reason that NXT even won at Survivor Series is because of the Undisputed Era. Obviously, Roddy Strong won his match. That was it, really. That was Undisputed Era's main help at Survivor Series. Obviously, Adam Cole won his title match, but that didn't count towards the overall score at Survivor Series. So,
yeah.
Really, it was actually a bit of a stretch.
It said as much about the rushed and nonsensical nature of the point system of Survivor Series than it did about anything
they
else.
They won by two clear points as well. So it's like Roddy's win didn't actually even count.
It
didn't matter.
The points thing is I never even tried to engage with it.
No.
It made absolutely no sense to me whatsoever.
Well, so he basically says that over the weekend, the Undisputed Era fellas dominated and they are the Iron Men of NXT. While this was happening, Tommaso Ciampa, Keith Lee, Matt Riddle and Dominik Dijakovic had made their way into the ring and were sort of standing there facing off. So they're being sort of positioned, I think, as NXT's response to the Undisputed Era. They're a loose faction.
The NXT 4 t-shirts,
are they? For life.
Yeah, are they? Were they a new edition? I've not seen those before.
Well, I don't know.
Matt Riddle, and one of the other guys was wearing. Yeah, they were like black and white NXT logo, and it just had the number 4 underneath it.
I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know if that's a thing.
NXT's own Survivor Series, yeah. Well, Ciampa cuts off Cole here and he says, wow, four boys who had their asses whooped at War Games. You sure do seem confident. He says, War Games was the beginning of the end for the Undisputed Era. The collapse continues tonight when Keith Lee and Dijakovic are having their match for the tag team titles, which was promoted ahead of the show. He said, Roddy, I'm sure your days are numbered. And he then addressed Goldie rather than Adam Cole,
like
saying,
that.
Goldie, I told you had to wait because Daddy's going to war. Well, war's over and Daddy's home. And then he said, Adam Cole, I don't see anyone from the Undisputed Era standing in my way. And then Finn Balor's music hits. He walks out onto the ramp where the Undisputed Era are standing. They part ways, letting him move through. He moves right in between them and says, looks like I'm standing in your way. Nice.
And then he kept...
So it was kind of a subtle positioning of Finn Balor on the side of Undisputed Era here. And this is a bit of a storyline that played out throughout the night that... It's kind of been a mystery, I guess, overall, whether Finn Balor will side with the Undisputed Era so far in NXT, because he's kind of helped them out inadvertently or possibly not.
Yeah, they've had sort of they've accidentally had some minor shared goals so far, but they've had no real clear point at which they should absolutely band together yet, which I think is great. I love the idea that it's just bubbling away underneath. That maybe, like, and also in a very heelish way, it's not like they're going to suddenly become friends.
No,
it's just they've got these self-serving shared objectives, and it's just more a case of how it's more of a question of, like, the Undisputed Era sort of asking the question of Finn Balor, how corrupt are you willing to become, to get what you want.
Mm-hmm.
But just remember, what you want ultimately is what we've got, and you can't have it. It's that weird, like, it's a really cool story that that's just kind of a B thread that's just kind of going along underneath. I really like it.
He's seemingly pretty darn interested in getting what he wants, because here he says, I'm standing in your way, and Tommaso Ciampa says, well then, you and me, why don't we do this? And this gets massive yes chance at Full Sail. I thought this was a really cool little moment. It was like a tantalizing proposition to start the show with. It's like, oh, by the way, here's a match that you're going to get in the first, we've announced this in the first 5 minutes. Surely if you were a viewer and you heard that that was, you weren't watching live and you heard that was happening, you'd be like, maybe I'll switch over, maybe I'll watch that match.
Well, there's that, you know, I think the instinct is, and I've never been a professional wrestling booker, but your instinct normally there is that you immediately go next week.
Yeah.
And then... Then you do more stuff in the show to build to it. I don't know whether it was a good idea or not. I think, generally speaking, when you've got a much longer period between pay-per-views...
Yeah, they've got it is February a bit, now.
Yeah, it is generally speaking better. It's a strength of NXT that they are really capable of stringing along stories in a way that still feels satisfying. So, for example, like, if they had said... that's going to happen next week, you know, don't announce it in the ring so you get the bad reaction. Just let it happen quietly. And then, but then bring that Killian Dane Pete Dunne match forward to still get, so you still get a big pot match. It's still, it feels relevant considering, you know, it feels like the kind of thing that's like, that feels like a Raw after WrestleMania kind of match you'd have, a sort of slight retread of something that just happened before. But it would still be really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the crowd would be disappointed by that. So I do think this was a slightly odd decision. Although the result was obviously, it was a great match.
I think it was to get in the first 5 minutes. Here's something that's going to happen at the end of the show. You need to stay tuned.
Yes.
Don't flick away. And I think it worked. Because they did this weird... It's a weird thing they currently do on NXT where they've clearly booked a match and it's clearly going to happen. And they don't announce it when it's being... like talked about in the ring, they announce it later on. So here Keith Lee cuts across and he goes like, I'm sure this match is going to be booked and Tommaso Ciampa is going to defeat you, but let's not dilly dally anymore, let's have Fish and O'Reilly in the ring because it's basking season.
Yeah.
And that kicks off the tag match, which we'll go through in a bit when we go through the sort of the rest of the show, but let's jump ahead to the main event of the show and kind of the fallout of that, because it is announced later on during the show. I think just in the middle of a match.
In the middle of the tag match. Yeah, it's just a ticker on the bottom.
William Regal has now made this official. It's like, he could have just come out and done that. Like he's like texting it in. It's like it's a teletext, phone-a-thon.
He's basically like the when the Raw GM was a laptop.
Mm. So the match between Finn Balor and Tommaso Ciampa, I thought was really, really good and really fun. It started out quite intense. Quite slow. Most of it was built around a headlock that Finn Balor just wouldn't let go of.
Yeah.
I've got you. Then Ciampa runs wild, dumps Finn over the ropes, trips him on the apron, knee strikes him off the apron, and then hits one in the ring. So Ciampa starts being in control. He takes off his knee pad and he goes for the running knee while Balor's down in the corner. But this is when Balor fires back, hits a sling blade, dumps Ciampa to the outside. He hits Ciampa with the same shotgun dropkick that he hit Johnny Gargano with, which is how Johnny got written off TV and injured, by knocking him through the barricade into the crowd. Mm-hmm. Ciampa doesn't go quite as far, but it looks absolutely brutal and really painful. And then he picks him up and goes for the 1916 on the ramp. However, Ciampa counters it and goes for the air raid crash onto the slightly more padded bit near the ramp.
Subtly more padded. Yeah, so
it was, and I thought that was a really cool little moment. It was a good little callback. It made the drama in the match feel a bit more emotional than it's just like, you know, it was kind of obvious, I think, that these two were going to go for the title. Like, Finn Balor hasn't really chucked his hat in the ring, like, obviously, until right in this second where he walks out and kind of comes out for Adam Cole, because he seemed preoccupied by the Johnny Gargano thing and then the Matt Riddle build.
Yeah.
So now he's back on the sort of track of like, I'm going for the NXT title.
Ciampa brings, in all these matches, brings a real intensity.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really cool to see Balor match that.
Yeah.
And I think it's all, and the same, he did it the same with his match against Riddle as well, but this whole new character has been so much more intense. It's been really good to see him kind of also looking like he's hard hitting as well. Like, even, like, you know, it just, I felt like funny looking back now, you really do sort of get the sense that his heart wasn't necessarily in it for that last little Raw run. And now he's just like firing in all cylinders.
Yeah.
You know, and also, I'm not even necessarily, I'm not a massive Balor guy.
No.
But I thought this match was fantastic. I thought intensity was great. And that moment, particularly, that callback, like, it felt like a pay-per-view match,
yeah,
really, and it was sort of scripted like a pay-per-view match as well. Yep. It was really good.
Speaking of pay-per-views, there's a little call back to NXT TakeOver War Games when Ciampa hits Project Ciampa in the ring. Finn kicks out really close at two, then hits a double stomp, the John Woo drop kick. Balor goes up looking for the coup de grace, gets cut off, and takes an air raid crash from the second rope. So kind of a call back to the finish of the War Games match there. And then that's when Ciampa says, this is for Johnny, and goes for the fairy tale ending. But at this moment, Adam Cole runs down, distracts. He gets knocked off the apron by Ciampa. Balor grabs the belt here. The official takes it off him, and they have a bit of a tussle, and it drops to the floor. And then Balor does sort of, it's like a reverse DDT, but he...
Yeah, he does that, yeah.
I think it was called a swap drop. But it lands on the belt. And there's this moment where Finn's like, oh, did I just get disqualified? Yeah. And the referee, I can't remember her surname, Jess is her first name. She looks at him and she's sort of like, I think that's fine. That's fine. Yeah, Prince Champa, it's a really close two. I thought it was a really good moment.
And also the delay of the conversation sells the kick out as well.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If he'd just gone straight in, it would have kind of been almost a bit silly.
Mm.
But that delay, like, it was just a really clever bit of sort of schmozzing of fake finish.
And playing a crowd, really. Yeah. I think that's the thing. Is like, to me, I was like, oh, that's the finish. And then it wasn't. And then there was this just beat longer where she takes the belt away, she goes to put it back, and that's when Ciampa sort of leans out of the ring and takes an enziguri from Cole,
mm-hmm.
turns back around, Finn Balor hits the 1916, 1-2-3, Finn Balor's the winner.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get this moment where Cole and Balor are both in the ring. They have a little smile to each other. They stand over the down Tommaso Ciampa, clearly happy with their work. Cole does the Undisputed Era pose. Balor, interestingly, takes one step in front of him and does his finger guns
mm-hmm.
at Ciampa. And there's this moment where it just felt so... I was just, is he going to do the hand gesture? And everyone was sort of like, is he Undisputed Era? Is that what this is about? Cole is playing it up beautifully. He's like, I am obviously a mastermind. I'm a genius. I've got this guy on my side. It's brilliant. Pats him on the back. And as soon as he pats him on the back, Balor just goes, Pele kick.
Yeah, people need to stop thinking that Balor isn't going to Pele kick them because he keeps doing it.
Yeah,
and it's
don't let him get in front of you.
No, if he stands in front of you, he's going to kick you. Step back.
Take one step because he doesn't. He's not looking.
I thought this was great. I mean, I'm not particularly keen for Balor to join the Undisputed Era. I think the Undisputed Era, if they're going to add anyone, should add a woman or muscle.
Yeah,
that's what they need. They don't need Finn Balor. Finn Balor needs to be the lone wolf for a while. I'm happy with that. But I like the way they're sort of teasing that. I like the way that if for Undisputed Era, they're thinking it's just like, this is just like a free agent acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's like their attitude to it, I think, is quite interesting.
So, I guess the finale here, when I think after that initial reveal of Finn Balor coming out and challenging Cole, like saying to Cole, I want the NXT title, in that his return to NXT, and then it all went into the Johnny Gargano program. It was all sort of him inadvertently helping out the Undisputed Era in a lot of instances because he was attacking Riddle to build to that match as well. So then we end up in a situation now where it feels like this could be the definitive moment that says, no, Finn Balor has no interest in the Undisputed Era or being a member of the Undisputed Era. He just wants the championship now. So do you think it will be Tommaso Ciampa and Adam Cole at Mania weekend, like Mania season takeover, because it probably won't be, I guess it's not at Mania weekend anymore. Or do you think it will be Balor, Ciampa and Cole? Or do you think that'll be at Portland?
If I had, my instinct is that the Balor feud is what takes us through for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And that keeps Balor busy for the eventual Gargano thing. We're ultimately leading to Ciampa versus Cole,
yeah,
at the big takeover. That's what I think's gonna happen. If the Gargano thing doesn't take off at the right time, maybe they'll switch that and make it triple threat. But I still feel like that's the sort of lily pads that they're jumping across mm-hmm. now. This is the. It's obviously more than that, but it's ultimately the holding feud for both, kind of all of them,
yeah,
until Johnny gets back, and then they go off and do.
I would love to see all three of them have a triple threat match for the title. I think that would be a really interesting dynamic to play into, and then you build to the singles match between Cole and Ciampa.
I think the problem with that though is that you've kind of seen it.
Mm.
I think you want to hold that up. I think. Also, I don't want to see the main belt get defended in triple threats.
No.
Would
you be happy to see Adam Cole versus Finn Balor? And do you think it would be momentum breaking for Balor for him to lose the title?
For
him to not win the title, yeah.
No, because there's so many ways that you can do that, especially with Undisputed Era. The other swerve could be a very Bullet Club-esque, you know, Balor wins and then they do the guns and kick Cole out.
Yeah.
You know, they've got dead
for a third time.
Yeah. Died again. But you know, I don't think they're gonna do it. I think there's lots of ways you can creatively protect Balor
mm-hmm.
between now and then, you know, whether that's through the Undisputed Era getting involved or other champion, or that's how, that is the Gargano return.
Yeah.
It's the Gargano return that costs Balor.
Balor, that's then a good idea. Like, and then he can go into a program with Johnny.
Yeah. So I think I think that seems to be the most logical. Mm-hmm. So they basically have to now tread water until Johnny's back. Johnny is the thing that ruins Balor's title hopes. That gets Balor out of the way. Champa comes in. Mm-hmm. Off we go.
So that was the end of the NXT episode with Balor standing tall, seemingly the next in line for an NXT title opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
If Champa, after pinning Adam Cole at War Games, was sort of at the top of the list, I think mm-hmm. Balor's now leapfrogged him.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So let's go back and go all the way through the show from start to end. And say what we thought, because it was actually a really, really good episode. So over with a War Games recap package with a bit of Pat McAfee.
In his shorts.
Pat McAfee. Actually, but doing bits. I liked it. I thought, like, when I saw him on the pre-show on Saturday night, I was like, no, I don't like him. But this little, they found the moment of like, oh, this was really good. That fired up promo he did on the night was really, really
good. It's funny, he's one of these media personalities who, you know, like, his thing when he does like the NFL or whatever mm-hmm. is that he's like the wacky funny guy who you never guess what Pat McAfee's gonna say next. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of his thing. When he's given his own little context to do that in, I think he works really well. With all of these guys they brought in, Sam Roberts is the same. You know, they've all thrived in their own context. And then you stick them in a suit and tell them to say this, that, and the other. And suddenly, it doesn't work so well.
Yeah.
So I do think, I think you're right. Yeah, when he does his own thing, he's fine. But I think when you go, right, here's the running order, you've got 30 seconds to tell us what's coming up. Suddenly it's like, oh no, this is just a presenter job.
Yeah.
This is a different thing now.
Yeah, I'm not a personality anymore. Yeah, yeah. We then got Josiah Williams introducing everyone from NXT. They ran down to the ring, did their little dances. Undisputed Era comes out. Champa says, Balor comes out, blah, 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 blah. Keith Lee says, it's basking season, and then the tag match just starts. And this was such an awesome, really fun tag match.
Mm-hmm.
And incredible, because there was a legitimate injury in the middle of it.
Yeah, apparently he's fine. It's just, he just kind of got his, well, I say
jolt something, yeah.
I think they said, he basically Sounds like he's got a concussion.
Yeah. So within the opening seconds of the match, Lee immediately does his leapfrog, drop down, shoulder tackle, and he gorilla presses Bobby Fish, and he takes him to the ropes, chucks him onto Kyle O'Reilly. Fish lands hard.
Well, it's all good because I think they were never quite balanced. When he picks him up, they sort of fumble a bit, and then as he goes to throw him, Fish isn't actually holding onto anything. So Fish never has that purchase to balance himself and flatten himself out. So I think as he comes down, because his arms are free, as he gets launched, I think he tips.
Well, and that makes me wonder whether if it was a concussion, if he took a hit before that, and that's why because they had a bit of trouble getting him up into the gorilla press in the first place. So maybe that was it. Maybe he was already.
I think it's more that he.
They said that, so it was sold. It was sold on commentary as if he'd hurt his knee on the floor.
Yeah, I think he was just out. I think from the moment, for whatever reason, they were just slightly out of balance, and because he wasn't bracing himself, I think he just tipped.
Yeah.
As he went through the air and just landed awkwardly and got a stinger or got whatever he got.
Yeah.
I think that's what happened.
So from that moment, we jumped. It went straight into a break, and I sort of. I find it really hard to concentrate in the picture-in-picture breaks of what's actually happening. I end up.
I mean, it works because I end up watching the adverts.
I end up watching the adverts, or just like, I know a lot about those weird almond things that keep or, advertised.
Or medicines where it's a 30-second advert and a 30-second of warnings of things, of the different ways it will kill you.
Yeah, but you need other medicines for those things. Yeah. So, but by the time it came back, basically Roddy Strong was in the ring.
Jeans.
Still in his jeans. So clearly had to suddenly enact some Freebird rules, like dramatically, ran down to the ring and was just in the match. However, I think they basically just played the match as if.
Well, yeah, because they even did the high low finish just with Roddy doing the knee, which I know they've done before anyway. But I mean, fair play to Roddy.
Yeah.
First of all, the sort of wherewithal, I guess it's just per chance. They're all going to be around the room when they discuss the match. So, you know, didn't miss a beat. The match didn't stop or slow down at all. Mm-hmm. You know, it just, fair play to them. I mean, that was, you know, really just high level professional wrestling.
and they put on a really, really fun match where, as you would imagine in a match against Keith Lee and Dijakovic, the story was these guys are a lot smaller and they have to work a lot harder to get these guys
down. I do think, though, that I'm still not sold totally on the idea of Dijakovic and Keith Lee being a tag team, because the guys in NXT are a bit smaller, generally speaking, Undisputed Era particularly. And it's like, I mean, they're not that small. I mean, they're small compared to like Randy Orton. But like, they still have this sort of classic NXT like brawls and stuff where they seem pretty even. And it's more in kind of spots and moments that you get those like, we're going to really powder into this guy, that's gonna sell the strength of them. But actually, when you actually just watch the match in its normal in between sort of stages, they seem very evenly matched in a way that sort of, I do think they, and I don't want to get like crazy heat for this or anything, but like they do need to in those moments work a bit bigger.
How dare
compared to like just a little bit. Just be a little bit, you know, like punches and stuff should take a little bit longer to do. There should be just a bit more of them just showing how much bigger and how much stronger they are.
I think they did that here quite well. I think this match showed off the size differential and played into the power game of Keith Lee and Dijak. Because there was moments, say, like, there was that moment where O'Reilly literally runs and jumps into Keith Lee and just bounces off. Keith doesn't even take a step back.
That's what I mean. Like, in the spots, they do it.
Yeah.
I'm talking about in the in-between, in the moving between those spots, when it's just like punches, kicks, throwing around. When they're moving in between the spots, They're very evenly matched, and they punch at each other in a way that like it's like if the Undisputed Era were going at each other, it would look the same, if you know what I mean.
Maybe in the early goings, I think they got it sort of together towards the end of the match, because it became about Roddy and Kyle attempting to chop down Dijak's knee first of all, and then they tried the same thing with Lee. It didn't necessarily work. The spots, however, I think were really, really fun. So there was one where Kyle jumps in and bounces off Lee. Lee then gets a wrist lock on Strong and lifts him up by one arm. And at the same point, Kyle runs into him again and still bounces off. Yeah. And then he just tips Strong onto Kyle like,
Yeah,
there you
great.
Go. Like, all of this stuff was really, really fun. Dijak did Time to Fly, the tossing suplex, onto Lee, who, like, they set it up with the Undisputed Era guys piled up, and Lee was like looking at the crowd, and he went, "Time to fly!" And then Dijak just lobbed him.
It was great.
Which looked amazing. Lee got a hot tag, started to run wild. He went for the spirit bomb on Strong. O'Reilly saved. He tossed both over. That was when it was announced that Finn would take on Ciampa later. O'Reilly and Strong were on the outside. Lee went to jump on them. They moved, got chopped down. Big chop block on Lee. O'Reilly dived off the apron with a running knee strike, which was done in a match with the Viking Raiders, I believe, and knocked someone into the ring bell. It was done quite recently that they did sort of knocking somebody into the ring bell. And that's when, like, so they then put Lee back in the ring. Roddy goes for a big splash, but Lee moves out of the way. O'Reilly goes for a big dive, and Lee just headbutts him out of the air. There was so much ridiculous fun in here. The choke bomb double.
Yeah, like, Was it like an arm? Somehow lifted him into a power bomb, didn't he?
Yeah.
He got the choke slam on. Yeah, it was. Yeah, that was crazy. The match was really entertaining, really, really fun. I mean, still, all these guys are working at such a high level. I'm really, and as much as I'm not crazy about Dijak and Keely being a tag team, what I am glad about is Dijak getting this push.
This time, yeah,
because he's amazing too. Mm. And I just think
he does the flipping senton off like springboard flipping senton.
I just think all these guys are working at a really high level at the minute. Yeah. And it's just, and I think the good thing that NXT is doing at the minute is just kind of riding the wave as well.
And this match had a crazy finish, a legitimately crazy finish. So Dijak hits a choke bomb, choke slam on the Undisputed Era guys. And he sort of tweaks his knee on the way down and sells that for a second. As that's happening, Adam Cole is making his way down the ramp. Everyone starts going, "Ooh, Adam Cole." And then the camera pans around and catches this amazing moment where Cole's walking down the ramp and Lee just appears out of nowhere like, "Surprise!" Like the opening of A Quiet Place.
Yeah.
Just whoo, and he flies into the obviously planted wrestlers in the crowd. But what an amazing,
great spot.
Brilliant. Like, all the people in the row behind were just like,
God. I was like studying the GIF, and there's a really subtle, like, it's just perfect timing by Cole, because he just has to do a little hop, like a tiny little hop, just to get himself into the air at just the right moment. And then
the momentum takes.
That's
him.
All Lee.
Yeah.
Like, that is all Keith Lee just launching another human being that far.
It's like in Breath of the Wild, the stasis thing is like boom, when you build up the thing.
I haven't played that. Why?
Some people might know what that is.
Tell them.
Yeah, well, we're talking to lots of people. It's not. We're probably not. however, this moment not only shocked everyone in the crowd, it shocked Lee, who was like, I didn't realize I was that strong. It shocked Dijak, who was like, I didn't realize you were that strong. The only people it didn't seemingly shock were Kyle and Roddy, who then hit the high-low on Dijak as he's just sort of gormlessly standing there, and get the 1-2-3. So even though Cole's attempt at distraction didn't work, it was still distracting enough.
Yeah, because Keith Lee was then too far away, because he did slide in at 2.
Yeah.
So he was just literally just too far away.
Yeah.
From saving the distraction to get back in. It was a great finish.
I, like, character-wise, I don't necessarily like it.
For who?
For Lee and Dijak. I think it made them look like idiots.
This is why they shouldn't be a team.
Yeah.
Because they're just so big, so strong, that they could both be so effective. They could still be in that little four kind of horseman thing, whatever they're doing, I think. But I just wouldn't put them together like this. I think this is exactly the reason why you don't do it. Because it does. Finishes like that are great. But the problem when you've got guys that are so much bigger, you kind of have to. That has to kind of play into the. Mm-hmm. You know, it's also difficult for the heels to then really ever be anything other than.
Yeah. And it means you have to come up with crazy finishes in an attempt to not always have it be the Undisputed Era swarm. The guy.
Yeah, I kind of, it almost needed like...
Or hit them with weapons, I guess.
If there was everyone, it should have almost been like, Cole coming down should have distracted the ref. The ref should have also been looking at Cole in the crowd. And then there should have been like a weapon shot with the belt.
Yeah.
That would have made slightly more sense.
Yeah, they don't do a lot of weapon shots with the belts, the Undisputed Era. Really.
No. Like, and I think that was an
Edge and Christian thing.
Yeah. But like that was a perfect moment to do it. Mm. You're undersized, you're slightly overmatched, because you're also down a guy.
Yeah.
So this is when the Undisputed Era have to start. You know, there's a moment where everyone's distracted. Use it. Don't just do your finish.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I mean, despite I think it making it seem a little bit like Keith Lee and Dijak,
it was still awesome.
Yeah,
it was like, still, no one looked like a chump.
It was great TV, and it was a moment that literally had me pop out of my
seat. Yeah, I thought it was. I thought the whole match was super entertaining. I loved it. I thought it was great.
It was an amazing hot start to NXT. Then we then got a recap of the Women's War Games match from TakeOver War Games. Funnily enough, and also just a rundown of sort of what happened on the night. The fact that Mia Yim was injured from some sort of mystery attack, which they're still sort of saying, oh, there was a mystery attacker. So I don't know if they're going to actually do it's somebody else and not Dakota Kai.
Yeah, I didn't kind of, I sort of blanked that hadn't been solved.
Yeah, it's still an open case.
I sort of,
this one's been on my desk for years.
I guess because they sort of, the way they did all the switcheroos of Rhea's team, I sort of don't care now.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Well, I just assumed I assumed it was Dakota Kai.
Well, this is it because also
I just say it was Dakota.
But
Kai.
Also, once you ended up with the people you ended up with in that team, it sort of rendered that mystery
moot anyway.
Moot anyway, like, it didn't actually matter.
Yeah. So unless they're going to do a big sort of try and build suspense for when Mia comes back and she attacks Dakota Kai and builds into that feud, or because she knows Dakota attacked her. So Mia's injured. Dakota Kai was chosen. Attacks Tegan Nox very viciously. They had a little fun told through snapshots. Baszler laughing, which I really enjoyed. They said that Kai was fined for putting her hands on William Regal. Nox was obviously unable to be there last night to be involved because she's injured.
Mm-hmm.
Kathy Kelly was backstage talking to Candice LeRae. Kathy Kelly put over the fact that this was one of the biggest weekends of Candice LeRae's career, obviously having won in the War Games match and won at Survivor Series. She said that all she's heard since War Games is Dakota Kai. Being in the ring and listening to her destroy someone I see as my sister was painful. This was somebody that was supposed to be my friend. She says that she's sure that Tegan will get hers on Dakota Kai, but tonight Kai isn't going to be wrestling against her friend. She's going to be wrestling against Tegan Nox's pissed off big sister. I liked this promo. I thought it was sort of like, it was a bit clunky when she was like, she's like my blood, but because they haven't interacted a hell of a lot.
No,
on
that was a little bit hammy, but I mean, a great babyface promo.
Candice LeRae, the character, seemingly makes friends with people very quickly.
Yeah.
Because we had this with Io Shirai. You're too trusting, Candice. Yeah. That's the problem. So it was then announced that Candice LeRae will take on Kai later. We got a recap of Lio Rush versus Angel Garza, and also a recap of the TakeOver kickoff show where Garza won his match, and then as he came back through the curtain, Lio slaps him. I like the fact that, like, backstage people were just going, don't do that, Lio!
Oh, yeah.
It's like, he's already done it and left.
There's a lot of stuff off mic that gets caught on NXT, which is very funny every week. Like, Bobby Fish again this week.
Mm.
Just going, you're not going to do shit!
We then saw Lio warming up and Akira Tozawa also warming up, ready for their match later in the night. Shane Thorne then made his entrance, and he was against Mansoor, so I guess there's another Saudi date coming up.
Yeah, not overly convinced by Shane Thorne's sitting on the turnbuckle that takes him. It was all a bit like, he had to really like...
Yeah, it takes a really...
It takes a while.
Yeah.
Pretzel himself on the
immobile legs.
Yeah.
This was fine, this match. This was the sort of thing that they probably should have been doing with Mansoor before any of the Saudi dates. Because if you want to give him big wins in his home country, maybe so the rest of the world cares, build him as a character. So I'm hoping that maybe this goes forward and they start to actually do something with him.
Well, the thing is, though, ultimately, the thing he's always going to fight against, and it's a legitimate thing to fight against, is the fact that he is ultimately flying the flag for that bad thing nobody wants to talk about.
Yeah.
That's what he's been asked to do. And I like the fact that in his gimmick and in his gear and everything, that it's not there. I think that's very key for him to be successful, is that they can't mention that.
Mm.
But also, that is his thing.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So it's a very, I think I'd...
They did mention that he won the
Oh yeah, I know, the they mentioned it. Like, but like, what I mean is, like, he will always be, for the longest time, he is essentially flying the flag for that bad thing.
Mm.
And I think that's something he will really struggle to...
overcome.
Yeah, and it's not like he's getting a hostile reaction or anything, but I just think that's going to make everyone, me included, just a bit cold on him.
He's
also very white meat baby face already.
Yeah.
So that's already like not the most fashionable thing. I don't know. I think he's gonna have to be there a while.
You know. It's a shame as well, because I think he's actually really good. He's got some really interesting moves.
Yeah, he's a good wrestler.
Does a good
upper. But hey, there's loads of good wrestlers.
There are loads.
That's the problem.
Yeah. He does a good little tornado headlock takedown thing in this match. He does a little roll-up, standing moonsault, suicide dive that gets caught. I think this was the best spot of the match. He does a suicide dive that Shane Thorne catches, and then he does a big sort of side suplex outside, which looked brutal and really horrible. There was a lot of outside action. Yeah.
I like Shane Thorne. He's good.
Yeah, Shane Thorne is really good. Mansoor then knocked him out of the rings, did the suicide dive, chucked him in, hits this sort of slingshot neck breaker thing that he does that looks beautiful, and then picked up the win. I think this was just a positioning of Mansoor as a character on NXT.
It was a match that happened.
Hopefully he continues to turn up. We then got Candice LeRae versus Dakota Kai in an interesting little match, I thought.
Dakota Kai with her new heel.
She got a new heel.
She's gone for the Io Shirai. Well, my jacket's not even on properly.
Yeah, I can't wear my clothes now because I'm so bad.
Ruffled hair.
Mm. Yeah, that's the thing, is that that's the symbol of a new heel is a haircut.
And a jacket.
Bailey got one. And Bailey's got a jacket as well.
Balor.
Yeah, Balor's got a jacket and a haircut.
I liked Dakota Kai's heel. I thought it worked really well. I thought she played it really well.
Yeah, I think she's quite interesting because it wasn't like... It was positioned very differently to, because Candice was also there for the last big heel turn, but she really took a beating from Io Shirai, and I think here she was the more fired up party, whereas Dakota felt like a different character, which I think is very like really positive about her heel turn. Is like she did come out feeling more vicious, more ruthless.
She
comes out with Tegan Nox's knee brace, puts it over the ring post, so you're like, foreshadowing, that'll be used later. There were some really fun little spots where she sort of remixed some of the stuff she's been doing recently as well into new bits. So she does the sort of spin around on the apron and then kicks him in the face.
Yeah,
she did that a couple of times here, but one time she just did it to Candice in the corner, so Candice's head just spins around and hits the ring post, which was really fun. And after that, she then hung her over the bottom rope.
That one I didn't like.
And then just booted her in the face. Well, because Candice is holding on, obviously.
Yeah, it's same thing with Sasha Banks.
Wrestling science is different.
Is it Sasha Banks?
When they hold themselves up.
And they just hold themselves and we wait for 10 minutes for you to stomp them on the chest. Like, I'm not a big fan of that.
That's an Andrade move.
Oh, yeah, does the knees, doesn't it?
Yeah. No, he does the double stomp. So he gets up and does a double stomp as you're sort of like climbing back up.
Yeah.
It's like, drop down. If you drop down, he misses.
Yeah, same with Candice was just holding herself there to be kicked in the face.
But the kind of story here, I guess, it was Candice was really pissed, basically.
Fighting the good fight.
And she was fighting the good fight, and she put in an absolute shift in this match.
She's great. She was trying
to hit a moonsault like right out the gate. She dodged the spinning kick thing initially, hit a big wrecking ball drop kick, did a suicide dive to the outside. This is all in the opening like minute of the match. It was great. Then they did the sort of ring spot. Candice LeRae went for a hurricanrana but took a power bomb. Then they did a back suplex onto the apron that wasn't really onto the apron. So there was a lot of, we're going to do something on the apron or we're going to do something on the floor in this show. And this was one of those moments. And this was one like the Bobby Fish one that made me go, because there was another one in the Leo Rush match that we'll get to that also made me squeamish. Basically, Candice just drops, does the sort of classic drop down and you're meant to just sort of backsplat on the apron. But Kai misses it by like that much.
Yeah.
And so just her shoulder clips it. It looked horrible.
Mm. Yeah, not great.
Yeah, really, but it was, I mean, looking horrible is what it was meant to do. So if she's not badly hurt, then I guess a lucky escape that actually just added to the drama of the match.
It's not ballet.
That was really, really fun. Then she sort of missed the moonsault. Kai hits the chiropractor, which is the worst name and the slowest move. LeRae kicks out. She then does the Gargano escape. LeRae keeps control. Kai sort of stumbles up to her feet, runs out of the ring. LeRae goes for a suicide dive, and this is where Kai just whaps her with the brace, which she'd gone to get earlier during a different spot and taken off the ring post, but then it was dragged. She was kicked, and then she dropped it to the outside, so it was already sort of there waiting for her. She smacks with the brace, dumps her into the steps, then the post. The official grabs the brace and tries and takes it off her. She then goes round the side of the ring, chucks a guy out of his chair and takes the chair and comes back round ready to beat Candice down more. The match has been obviously thrown out by this point. As she goes to sort of swing, Rhea Ripley runs in with a huge boot that knocks the chair out of her hand. And then she chases off Dakota Kai and then sort of is like, Candice, are you okay? Yeah. You're my friend. We went through war together.
Other's good match. Really good match. Finish made total sense. Candice looks strong.
Dakota looks mean.
You know.
Ripley's the hero.
Yeah.
Ripley is so over as well post. Yeah. Well, she was over before, but she's well over now.
Yeah, made perfect sense. I thought it was really well-booked
finish. It was a really fun little bit of the show. We then saw Kathy Kelly with Ciampa. She asked how he was feeling about Finn. He said he can call himself the Demon, he can call himself the Prince. He's the longest reigning champ in NXT history, but I'm the guy who made this the A show. I'm the guy who made Goldie the most prestigious title in all of sports entertainment.
I'm slightly worried that the mention of the Demon might foreshadow him coming out as the Demon at some point, which I obviously don't want to see again. But
I don't think he will.
I don't think he will either. But
I think he might do face paint
on a
takeover
of,
somewhere down the line, but in more sort of a nod to the New Japan rather than like I'm doing the Demon again.
Yeah.
I think Ciampa's got such an interesting way of talking that I just think he's so kind of methodical and calm.
Mm.
And eerily kind of still that it everything just comes across with such gravitas.
Yeah, he doesn't he's not yelling and shouting and he's very cool.
He's very threatening in a way that's understated. We then got a Cameron Grimes promo package where he was sort of mucking about by a river like Huckleberry Finn.
This was what it was.
Jim.
Jim.
He says, I always wanted to be an NXT superstar. I scratched, I clawed, I pushed a couple of people down. I said a couple of things I shouldn't have said, and I'm going to continue to do that. How are we not going to talk about how I have the quickest victory in the company? Because I'm not a bae. I'm not a bro.
But I'm
220 pounds, 6 foot, 26 years old, and I've been doing this all my life. It was actually a really good little promo.
It was a great promo, but he was the context was dumb.
Yeah,
that was probably. It was actually a great promo, but they've just 1990s'd him.
I love
and gone, oh, you're from the South, then you must be a hick.
I love everything about him except the character. It's like he's really good. He's so good on the mic.
Well, this is the
he's
dumb
so
thing.
He's so good in the ring.
No, but this is what's dumber about it. It's not even a character. He's at no point in his character does he talk about coming from a swamp or farming or any of that stuff.
But he's country strong.
He just has an accent and wears a hat. That's it.
Yeah, but if you filmed
this podcast at a dairy farm, you would wonder why we would not. Why is this podcast not about dairy farming? Like, it's just they've just recontextualized a perfectly reasonable promo. I don't know why they're doing it because it's not his character.
I'm going to say
he never talks about it, never mentions it. He's not called Mr. Farmer. It's so dumb. It's a weirdly un-NXT thing to do to find a field to film that in.
Well, that's why you don't give people crap hats. The hat was a gateway.
This is the thing. I don't even mind the hat.
You're wrong.
I don't even mind
You're
the hat.
Fundamentally wrong.
Wrestlers of
look
all...
Look where it's led us, Simon.
No, this is the thing. He can have the hat and still not film it in a farm. Like, I don't understand what they... What is the character?
With his little roll up long johns.
And the banjo music in the back. It's like, you don't have to do that.
No.
You can give him the hat, call him country strong. He has got the accent. Fine. But at no point is his character that. Like, yeah. I just can't wait till
he's painting a list of his enemies onto white fences.
Yeah, this is... I'm not a fan of that.
No.
But again, fan of him. Great promo, great worker, great talker. Like, we saw him at that Progress show.
Yeah.
His mic work, his heel mic work particularly, is really good.
Yeah.
Just don't know why...
He's good at dabbing as well.
Just don't know why... Yeah, he is. I just don't know why they've done this stupid farm gimmick.
Don't know, indeed. We then got another promo package, this time putting over Rhea Ripley in her achievements for Survivor Series week, making her feel like a big, massive deal, which she is. We then got Akira Tozawa versus Leo Rush. Tozawa comes out holding a Raw t-shirt, as if he's playing the heel or hoping to get back some sort of victory for the red brand.
Weird.
Even this win, Tozawa, wouldn't mean you won Survivor Series. You're still bottom of the pile. I loved this match.
It
was so good. They worked so well together.
Yeah.
They started off with sort of both doing quickness and escapes. They both went for like low versions of their finishers. So Tozawa went for a big senton, and Leo goes for a on the floor frog splash, both missing.
In those opening exchanges, what I really liked what they did was when they were doing all the quick escapes and stuff. Often that is, you know, obviously amazing to see people do that stuff,
mm-hmm.
but can very quickly look like a choreographed dance. And what they did is, when they were doing all that stuff, is in the interchanges between those little sequences, they really stayed on top of each other and were still grappling, trying to grab an arm here, a headlock. Like, they were still like backing each other up. Like, it still felt like a fight, even though they were. I just thought that was brilliant work on their part, because so often those sequences, you know, that, you know, people are standing 5 feet away from each other doing handstands, and it's like, this is great, but, you know, there's this version of it where you're actually still scrapping. I thought it was really cool what they did.
Yeah, so sort of one of the central themes of this match was German suplex applied in various different forms throughout. So there was a bit, like, very early they teased doing a German suplex off the apron, which everyone was just like, this is insane. But it was Leo Rush doing it to Tozawa at one point. Mm-hmm. So he was, like, really low squatting and Tozawa was holding on. Then Leo, from the apron, did this sort of crazy flip. He basically did a sunset flip without doing the sunset flip bit of it. He just did a flip and then landed in a powerbomb position underneath Tozawa. Mm. Tozawa fights him off, stomps him down, so he's sort of flat on the apron, and then just does a senton across him, like across his chest.
Yeah, that
while
was
he's, like, pinned to the apron.
That was
an amazing bit.
Yeah.
Horrible looking. Absolutely horrible looking. Akira then hit the rolling senton off the apron. He hit this missile dropkick as well after that, that sent Rush rolling backwards all the way to his feet, and he did like a Ric Flair, ooh, and then a slump. It was like, I think Leo's selling is really, really
Leo Rush
good.
Is great. It's
he
funny.
Ragdolls like nobody.
Yeah, it's funny. Like,
it's like Ricochet, actually. I think he makes simple moves look amazing. Yeah. Like Ricochet taking a claymore and just turning inside out.
Well, this is, I think with Leo Rush's character on Raw, we basically forgot that he's an amazing worker.
Mm-hmm.
And I think giving him this position has just been a great way of just reigniting his career.
Yeah.
He's fantastic.
It's where he's weirdly, he's proving what he was saying all along. He was like, I could be a main event guy if you gave me a chance.
Well, let's not go that far.
No, but like, he was. So this was the main event of the first hour, I guess. This was the finale of hour one of NXT. And I think he's clearly proved that he's could be a show stealer in NXT.
He's also rare amongst the cruiserweights they brought in who can really talk.
Mm-hmm.
They've not got loads of great talkers in that cruiserweight division.
Yeah.
So I think now I would like to see now. I think because he's having great matches every week, I'd like to see them now build that little pool of three or four contenders and start giving him some promo time to really build some of those feuds. I think more mic time for Leo would be great. It's the next evolution of it's kind of they've proved their point. These matches make total sense on this card every week. Let's now start giving them a bit more build time. I think would be the next.
And like some fresher faces, because obviously like I feel like Angel Garza is going to get his shot again.
Yeah. So really, right now it's probably Grimes, Garza, Tozawa. Right?
Well, it was Kalisto and Tozawa at TakeOver, was it? Or was it? Yeah, I think it was. Kalisto and Tozawa at TakeOver. Oh, no, at Survivor Series, because it counted as a win for NXT when Leo won.
But
I think
that,
like,
that seems to me, I don't know.
Yeah, it'd be interesting, like Mansoor, someone you could throw in there as a character. But I think Leo,
you don't need any more than that.
Yeah, Leo's like, sort of in that weird position where he's not really a character at the moment. He's just he's just sort of a very over champion and doesn't say much or do much beyond be really good at the ring. And it seems that everyone else is having all the kind of like they're just going, here, you got a cruiserweight title.
Does the cruiserweight title still carry the 205 stipulation?
What, you have to be under 205?
Yeah.
I think so. You have to be cruiserweight.
Because Grimes obviously said he was 220.
If you can cut 15, though.
I don't think Angel Garza's under 205.
I don't think Buddy Murphy ever was. But no. So the German comes back around and they actually just do it.
Mm.
The German suplex off the apron, which I like. it was nuts, this moment. They were fighting on the apron. Tozawa hits a pump kick, goes for the German once. Leo blocks it, fights off. Then Tozawa just slaps him and just goes, "Hey!"
Yeah.
Leo does a backflip, lands on the outside, sprawled.
It's funny. I was thinking about that spot, and I was like, actually, it makes way more sense if you flip over.
Yeah.
First of all, that takes the momentum out of it, and it looks crazier, and you can sort of spot your landing and protect your
head. You're not going to hit your head, yeah.
Yeah. Especially we've seen people hit the head of that ramp a few times recently. Yeah. So like, yeah, I thought it was a great spot.
And it was unbelievable. I was dangerous for Tozawa, who had to do a German
suplex. He just had to flat back
with a bridge and then go.
Yeah, I think it's that kind of thing's like the perfect thing where it's like the spot. We've taken a dangerous spot, we've made it look more spectacular and safer at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Yep. Do more of that.
Really they then end up in the ring. Tozawa hits a. He goes for the come up, but gets caught in a German suplex. He then does the deadlift German suplex. Rush kicks out. There's a senton on the. He does the big top rope senton, but lands on the knees, which looks super painful. There's a few kicks, and he does a. Oh no, this is slightly before actually. That like Tozawa spat out his mouth guard after taking a few kicks, and then Leo goes to do the come up. But Tozawa was not there. So I don't know whether Tozawa actually got genuinely rocked or whether that was part of it. But Leo sort of bounced off the ropes and there was no one there. And he sort of then slumped down and was like, ooh.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, it was a bit of a weird little moment.
Gum shields don't just fall out like that.
Well, he spat it out.
Oh, I see what you mean.
But right. It was, I don't know whether he spat it out because he'd actually been like
hit.
Because they were putting over the idea that obviously the gum shield stops a knockout. But
maybe Leo just went too quick.
Yeah, I don't really know. It was just, that was a little bit of a stumble in what was otherwise a really, really good match. So it was it's the big splash onto the knees. Leo goes up, hits a final hour to Tozawa's back, and then rolls off, and Tozawa rolls over, and then he hits the final hour going the other way onto the front. 1, 2, 3, Leo retains.
Normally when people do a double, if they ever try and do like a double finisher from the ropes, it takes so long, it sort of renders it pointless. But he's so quick that it made sense. That could almost be, his finisher could almost be doing it twice.
Yeah. This match was just unbelievable.
I loved it.
It was really, really fun. Cathy Kelly was then with Finn Balor. She asked him for final thoughts before his match with Ciampa. He said, Ciampa's walking around like he's the toughest man in the world. I already put Johnny Gargano in hospital. Riddle found out a takeover. Tonight, Ciampa gets to meet the prince. Nice little promo.
Yeah.
Bit of fire for the match. Then it was Xia Li comes out, and Vanessa Bourne is here to get revenge for Aaliyah, who ended up with a broken nose after her match with Xia Li, which caused me to sigh, caused Nigel to cream his pants, and Beth Phoenix on commentary to say, "Settle your tea kettle, Nige," which I thought was great. Immediately, Bourne posts herself, gets a powerbomb from Lee, and this is when Shayna Baszler, Marina Shafir, and Jessamyn Duke arrive. Lee then just quickly kicks Bourne in the back with this spinning kick and pins her, so she's got the win under her belt before any of the shenanigans can happen. Yeah. Duke and Shafir rush the ring. Lee manages to fight them off. Then the numbers get her advantage of her, and she sort of ends up in a confrontation with Baszler. She gives Baszler a big kick, but Baszler knocks her down. Duke and Shafir hold her. Baszler comes in with a running knee. She gets the microphone after having kicked Lee out of the ring. And Baszler says, everybody's trying to take credit for what happened this past weekend, but the truth is nobody had a weekend like I had. I beat SmackDown Women's Champion Bayley and Raw Women's Champion Becky Lynch at the same time, which is true. But meanwhile, Duke and Shafir are both clapping, going, you are the best. You're the best. So they've been learning from the Undisputed Era school of thought.
Yeah, school of just keep do stuff.
Talking.
Yeah.
People start chanting Rhea Ripley, and Baszler tries to continue the promo, but she can't really get a word in edgeways because Ripley's music hits and she just strolls down to the ring, basically just does her whole entrance and then walks to the ring really casually, like she's completely unintimidated. Rhea Ripley is amazing.
Mm. I do think this was a slightly odd, the sort of Xia Li stuff before this was slightly odd.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of suddenly like, oh wait, hold on, so now Xia Li is talking like she's a contender all of a sudden. Like, it was just, that was a bit of a handbrake turn. Yeah. I was like, we're really in the middle of a fantastic build to not just Rhea Ripley, but, you know, other female wrestlers that are really up on there in the contenders level. To suddenly now start throwing someone who's only had two squashes in the last few weeks. I don't know. That was just a bit like, okay, hold on.
I think it was a random choice because then you don't have to include her in that running. Yeah. So it was more like it's a statement sort of beatdown. to someone who you don't then have to include in a storyline with Shayna Baszler, which just convolutes the whole thing.
Yeah.
So this was more just to be like, well, you're probably the only expendable person.
Yeah, you kind of...
Because Vanessa Bourne, beating down Vanessa Bourne isn't really dramatic. Xia Li has at least been booked dominantly, so beating her down kind of makes sense.
Oh, no, it does, but it was just there was this sort of suggestion at the start of it where it was kind of like she was kind of putting her... Like, yeah. I'm going to be... And it was kind of like, you don't need to say that now. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? That was just like a weird, like...
I guess the point is it's like Baszler needs to rebuild some of her...
Mystique.
Her NXT bully heat because she lost at War Games with a massive advantage in the match as well. So, like, that kind of does tarnish her character. And I think makes people hotter for the... Like, will make people hotter for the Rhea Ripley match if we start to rebuild Baszler as the dominant force in NXT and Ripley as, like, the opposing force.
Yeah, I think I would have rather have seen, like, another match with someone from that team or something involving them that spilled out into the arena that Rhea Ripley could, like... I'd almost rather see, like, the three of them just go and viciously beat up Candice LeRae for no reason. That spills out onto the ramp.
Yeah.
And then, because that would have felt more vicious.
Candice has got too much drama going on.
That's too much drama. I know, maybe she's not
and
that.
And everyone else,
like,
is a heel now.
I think to just have this, some reason involving Xia Li claiming some sort of pretension to the title, sort of was suddenly a bit like, well, hold on, like, this is not, this feels a bit of a handbrake turn. I'd rather seen them do something super vicious to someone from the other team than that. But it still worked.
Yeah, it still worked. And I thought it led to this really... It led to a fun exchange between Rhea Ripley and Shayna Baszler. Ripley gets in the ring. The heels powder out. She says, where do you think you're running to? I came out here because I had something to say to you face to face. Baszler, on her own, then heads back to the ring and stands on the apron. She says, Shayna, I just wanted to say congratulations. You beat Bayley. You did beat Becky. But when you went face to face with me, I beat you. And you know what? I'm going to do it again. But next time, it's going to be for the NXT Women's Championship. Yes, please.
Yeah,
I great. Want to see this one-on-one match.
I do too.
A very lot.
Yeah,
many
I just,
times.
The great, like Rhea Ripley and Shayna Baszler, particularly. They just look so tough and mean, and they're so like hard-hitting and vicious. I just think their chemistry will be.
Yeah,
ridiculous.
I can't wait to see the. You know, everyone's been doing the "Here's me 10 years ago and here's me now" picture. That, but for like 2 years ago, Rhea Ripley, beginning of the Mae Young Classic, and her in 10 years' time, when she's like battle scarred and like really deep on the mosh kid thing.
Yeah.
Baszler then gets in the ring, gets in her face, and she says, "Rhea, you might be the nightmare, but I'm the reality, and the reality is that you're going to be tapping or napping just like the rest of them." Then as she goes to leave, Rhea says, "Oh well, if that's what you think, why don't you do it now? Yeah, you're not going to step back in the ring, are you? Because I'll drop you." Which I thought it was a bit of a flat ending. It wasn't quite a cool enough line.
It sort of ended twice.
Yeah.
And it only needed to end once.
But again, like,
it's
a hot build to what is going to be an amazing takeover match.
I think it's going to be amazing. No doubt. Can't
wait. We then got a recap of the triple threat from War Games and the news that Damian Priest apparently has one or two cracked ribs because he was shown backstage with a medical technician, doctor. Don't know why I said technician.
No, not why.
With a doctor, a nurse or some sort, saying that this was happening. But it was also announced that next week he's going to take on Killian Dane, even with the cracked ribs.
Oh, sorry. I thought it was Dane next week.
No, it's Priest and Dane next week.
Oh, I must have seen Peter instead of Priest.
Yeah. Then we got the Tommaso Ciampa versus Finn Balor, and that was all she wrote for NXT. Overall... A really, really strong episode.
Really strong episode.
The only match that wasn't really blowing me away was Mansoor versus Shane Thorne. But it did what it needed to do, and it got out of there pretty quickly. I've also been the person who said, like, if you're going to use Mansoor for the Saudi Arabia stuff, make him a character. Feature him on some shows at some point. Do something with him. So at least they're doing something with him now. Outside of only featuring him once a year or twice a year
in Saudi Arabia. Yeah, but those shows still aren't canon.
The only time he works is like a WrestleMania-sized event. Like, it's weird.
Yeah, I'm not personally that sold on the whole Mansoor project, personally. But that's just me.
Yeah. But the rest of the show, opening segment, amazing. Opening tag match, amazing. Candice LeRae, Dakota Kai, a lot of fun. Akira Tozawa, Leah Rush, wicked.
That was probably match of the night for me, actually.
I think that was match of the night. Vanessa Bourne versus Zaya Lee.
Fine.
Led into a really cool angle, so it was, you know, it was only... It stuck around as long as it needed to.
That's the one I question about, only because it's sort of the... The match just didn't need to happen, and it didn't need to be connected to what happened afterwards. I just thought it was a bit odd. That booking for me was a bit odd.
But actually, this is the other point of the title of our discussion today, that being there's a NXT title challenger in Finn Balor. There's another one in Rhea Ripley, which I think was probably more read into the weekend that mm-hmm. she had, because she got the pin over Shayna Baszler at War Games. But this is kind of cementing that. So that's the build that we have going forward, seemingly, that Finn Balor and Adam Cole will be in the mix, and so will Tommaso Ciampa. And then on the women's side, I think it's going to be building to a Rhea Ripley, yes. Shayna Baszler feud. I couldn't be happier. I think that is all the right choice.
Yeah.
I'm now excited to see what comes next for the North American title, who's the next big contender for Roddy. And I'm really excited to sort of, I think the end of the prophecy must be fairly soon. The fallout.
Looks like Riddle might be the next. That was mentioned in the promo, wasn't it? I think Ciampa said that Riddle would go for.
Yeah, it seems like it's those four versus those four.
Yeah,
like at some point. So there's going to be, maybe there'll be a clean sweep and a complete new set of champions coming out of one of the takeovers soon. I don't know. Let us know in the comments down below what you thought of NXT. I'd say it was a very high 4-star show.
Yeah, that was great.
Burgeoning on a 5-star show.
Oh.
No further questions.
No further questions, Your Honour.
Yeah, that's it.
I rest.
I was going to ask what you're doing this weekend, but I have actually already asked you that.
Did you?
Yeah, I asked you earlier, and you said, you're getting drunk.
Oh, yeah, no.
You're going to East Grinstead to get drunk.
I'm going to go to quite a weird part of outer London and get drunk with my friend.
Yeah.
We're not really going to talk. I think we're just going to drink.
I think those are the best catch-ups. I'm meeting an old friend tomorrow evening for a similar sort of catch-up, where I think, like, the ones where you go home and I think, like, my girlfriend's often like, well, give me the details. What are they up to? Well, how's their wife? How's their new house? And it's like, I didn't ask any of this. Every time we go to D&D, I get all of those questions when I go home. It's like, how's your mate Dan? How's the baby? How's Alex? How are they finding living in Rochester? Blah, 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 blah. It's like, I didn't ask any of this.
No.
Like, ask me how Zadark is.
But also, I don't care.
Because I know how Zadark is. He's dead.
That'll basically be what happens tomorrow.
Yeah.
On Saturday, even. But I keep getting confused as to what week we're in. So I thought tomorrow was when we're doing something.
Mm.
But it turns out we're
not.
Your
calendar blindness, yeah. And also, because not even confused about what week it is. That's the day as well, because we're not doing that thing on the Friday either.
No, I know.
Yeah. It's completely wrong.
No,
you've fundamentally misunderstood.
Yeah. And I asked. And it was my idea.
You booked it. You said the date that you were free.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really do calendars.
Mm. We are going to see Knives Out tomorrow as well. That's the thing.
Which is annoying, because I've just booked in. I literally, 2 days ago, booked in to see it with some friends next
week. Oh, did
you? Yeah.
No, sorry. Well, we have to go see it.
Can we see something else?
No, we have to see it for Screen Store.
Can you not just see it?
Well, how am I going to... Well, it's a rubbish podcast. It's a rubbish review of me just doing it on my own.
No, just, you know, write it down.
Just write it. But if you are interested and you are a subscriber to Screen Stalker's YouTube channel, then we'll be doing... I mean, you can watch it if you're not a subscriber, but it'd be great if you were a subscriber. We'll be doing a review of Knives Out tomorrow on the channel. It'll also go out in podcast form as well for people who only want to listen to things rather than see them.
Which is fair enough.
Which is fine. We're not great to look at.
No.
So, yeah, there's that. Please check that out. Please watch that. That's about all we've got time for on this podcast. So thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.